Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome inside ESPN Studios. Welcome to the Spencer Wilson Show. I'm your host, Spencer Wilson, no longer flying solo as Mr. Sean Cloud has returned from Orlando, Florida.
I returned from the sunny state, and I come straight back into
the snowy state. From the sunshine state to the snow-filled state.
It was interesting. I witnessed the coldest day in Florida.
Oh, really?
42 degrees, which is not cold.
Wow. But for them, that's like Antarctica.
Yeah. Everyone was all bundled up in like snow gear and stuff. I'm sitting here, dude.
I saw yesterday morning when we were having our big snowstorm, I saw pictures because, you know, I do morning traffic for KRNV, and I saw pictures from Las Vegas, and Las Vegas was getting snow flurries.
Wow.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen much, but it does happen.
It does. It's very rare, but it does happen. But how was Florida? Did you have fun? Was it a good trip?
Florida was great until we went to Disney World. Normally you want to say, oh, that's the happiest place on earth. No. It is for kids. It's not for us adults or whatsoever. And I saw a lot of like parents that were pissed off or not having a good time. And you could tell that their kids were having good times. But the parents were just like, I need something to drink. I need something.
I feel like that's usually how it goes. If the kids are screaming and running around having a good time, usually mom and dad are somewhere with their head in their hands. Kind of like, how much longer until this is over?
Pretty much. Unless you're a diehard Disney fan. I mean, I went for the benefit of the fiance. She had never been to Disney World. She loves Disney.
Oh, wow.
So it was one of those experiences together where we got to go. Once nighttime hit and the sun dropped, I had a much better time. There wasn't as many kids. I wasn't getting ran into constantly. And this was a slow day. We went on Valentine's Day. So that I was like, all the kids are in school, right? No, lie. Not true. it was not true at all. All the kids were there, and we were talking to, you know, some of the people that worked there, and they were just saying that this was one of the slowest days of the year. And I'm looking at them, I was like, there's got to be like 30,000 people here, you know?
Yeah.
Other than that, it was pretty good. You know, we got stuck on a lot of rides, which was pretty disappointing.
It broke down? You got stuck?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. So I'll just run through a quick list of it. So the Peter Pan, Flight of Peter Pan, it's a classic ride if you've ever been on it. If you haven't been on it, I mean, I don't really enjoy it because it's classic and I don't understand what's happening, but it's there. We got stuck on that within like 5 minutes of getting on the ride about 15 minutes. Then we go to Haunted Mansion. It broke down before we got in there, so it took us 20 minutes to even get into the little elevator. Then we got into the elevator, went in, and it was all black. There was no lights on anywhere in the ride.
Wow.
None of the holograms were working. Nothing was working. And then we got stuck right at the end for 25 minutes. Just listening to, like, you know, Mother Teresa.
Yeah.
With, like, the face saying, like, come back soon. Yeah, I got stuck there.
For 25 minutes you heard that. Yeah. That would drive a man crazy.
No, you want to know what drives a man crazy?
Go ahead.
Getting stuck in Asteroid Blaster in the Buzz Lightyear one where you shoot and get points.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's this point where there's, like, a dome, and it's kind of a screen that's having a space flight. You can see Buzz, like, battling stuff, and you're supposed to shoot stuff as well. We got stuck there for, like, 25 minutes.
Oh, geez.
And thank God there's, like, that thing that turns you around because we just turned and faced the people behind us because we were like, we're gonna have a seizure sitting over here.
Oh,
so, man. We got stuck on that. We got stuck on Haunted House again and a few others. But other than that, it wasn't too bad. I mean,
yeah,
you can't smoke either because there's two smoking places. And I was quitting smoking until I went to Disney and was just like, I need a cigarette. Other than that, my trip was amazing. It was nice and warm. The family was great. I got to see everyone. I got to see my mom. I haven't seen her in a couple of years. Got to see my dad, who's a lot healthier. Thank you, everyone, for praying for him. He is a lot healthy. He played a full 18 round of golf.
Oh, hey.
Which is amazing. I'm not entirely sure what his score was.
Still, though, the fact that he was out there, that's awesome.
So everything went great. It was beautiful. And then we came back, and I made the mistake of wearing, like, skinny jeans on the plane, and I didn't bring a jacket with us to Florida. So when we got back, it was, like, 15 degrees outside.
Oof.
And I got out of the plane, and there's that little notch, you know, that you feel when you get out of the plane.
Yep.
That was the worst moment. I got out, and I was just, like, tried to turn back in the plane, like, please take me back. Yeah. I don't want to be here. But it is gorgeous, and having the snow really helps because we didn't get that snowfall through the entire snow season, so we're getting it now.
We're making up for it.
And it's great. I mean, have you gone out? Do you have any plans to go skiing?
I was trying to get out last weekend. Unfortunately, couldn't get up over the passes, so wasn't able to do it. But very shortly here with the conclusion of the show, we'll be on our way on a little family trip to Colorado for some skiing over the weekend.
Wow.
So very, very happy and looking forward to that. And, of course, if you can't do that, if you're still here, though, should be a lot of great skiing this weekend here locally as well. Should be a lot of fun.
Pow-pow.
Yes, as the true boarders and skiers call it, the pow-pow out there on the mountains. I just feel weird saying it.
I do too. Yeah. We grew up in Incline. I feel really weird saying it. I feel like a goober, you know what I'm saying?
But let's get to some other local news involving Nevada sports because both PAC basketball programs had kind of up and down weeks. Both went 1-1 this week. Let's start with the men's team who played Wyoming on last Saturday, came away with a big 82-49 win. That was Nevada's 10th straight win after that game. Trey Porter led the way with 14 points, followed by Caleb Martin and Jordan Caroline with 13 points. Then Jazz Johnson also adding to the total with 12 points. And this was a nice kind of revenge game for Nevada. Last year, they went up to Laramie and had a tough 104-103 double overtime loss up there. So I think this was nice for them to go back to that building, get some confidence, get some revenge, and set themselves up for what we're all kind of thinking. I don't think a walkthrough game with San Diego State is how you would describe it, but I don't think any of us ever really fathom them losing the game to the Aztecs. But that's what happened a couple nights ago in Southern California. Nevada struggled on the road, trailing 30-21 at the half. And although Nevada did outscore San Diego State 36-35 in the second half, they still fell 65-57 on the road. Just the second loss for the Pack this season, but they have not won in San Diego since joining the Mountain West Conference in 2012. So it still kind of remains that one big hurdle for this team.
And Musselman hasn't won at San Diego State at all.
Period.
And he's an alumni of San Diego State. So I mean, there's got to be some sort of like juju missing up in there. I don't know.
There's something messing with him there.
Either way, it was a very defensive game in the beginning. I listened to most of the game, almost all the game, actually, I should say. I listened to all the games since I worked the game.
I was going to say, hopefully you heard all the games,
Sean. By the time we got to the second half, I was like, I don't know if I want to listen anymore. But very defensive play. Unfortunately, for a good example of this is that very good defense from San Diego State. Very good. They kept Jordan Caroline, non-score the entire first half.
That's not easy.
He got his first 2 points in the second half. I believe it was probably like a minute in. And he only got 8 points total. That says a lot. When you can keep Jordan Caroline or Cody Martin or Trey Porter, any of these big guys away from scoring or blocking all their shots or taking steals from them, it really kind of felt like as if Nevada switched roles with San Diego State. You know, San Diego State took what Nevada normally does with the steals, with the blocks and the threes and all this, and just walked away with it. Because, I mean, you'd get a steal, and then all of a sudden you'd hear 3 points. A steal, all of a sudden you hear 3 points. It was 3 points over and over. Caleb Martin led the way with 20 points, 7 rebounds. He is still the leading scorer on our team, which is good that he got that. It's just really unfortunate to see, you know, Trayshawn Thurman, 0 points. Jazz Johnson, 5 points. And Jordan Brown had 6 points, which was really good.
Yeah.
But we had a lot of fouls early in the game, so we had to take out people and all this other stuff.
And we mentioned just the second loss for the Pack this season, and something that this loss and that other loss against New Mexico, there are two things that those games have in common. One, Nevada only had one double point scorer. So in Sean mentioned it in this game against San Diego, I believe Caleb Martin had 20 points, and then that game against New Mexico, Jordan Caroline had 17 points. So in both those games, Nevada only having one double digit scorer. And also in this game against San Diego State, Nevada scored, I think, what, 57 points?
57
points, which is their second lowest to their 58 points scored against New Mexico in that loss. So I think the takeaway from both of those losses are, A, can't get into foul trouble early in games. Because, I mean, that's pretty much baseline for everybody. But when you have not necessarily just three or four guys that can, but when you have three or four guys that are really just leading the way, you can't get in that early foul trouble. And also, I think in these games, you're going to have to find a way early to kind of spread the ball around a little bit more. When you have just one double-digit scorer, what I kind of take away from that is either A, you have a lot of guys trying to go one-on-one and just not getting it done with turnovers, or B, shots just aren't falling. And I think it was a little bit of a combination of both two nights ago against San Diego State. But I think the biggest takeaway is maybe early in games when you're not shooting that well, try to pass the ball maybe a little quicker and a little more often and just try to attack the basket instead of focusing on those outside shots.
Yeah, and I agree. I was thinking the exact same thing when the game was happening. I was like, you know what, get away from these three shots. You'd see a lot of threes. I mean, you had a free throw from Porter that went over the basket.
That's some strength right there. Yeah, some strength.
But it is loud in there. It was sold out. It was completely packed. It was loud. I could, you know, there's times where we couldn't hear what was happening. So I agree. They needed to pass more, and they tried to do that. But I think that San Diego State just studied tape so well on this that they kind of knew what they were going to do, where they were going to pass out first, what all these numbers they're throwing up with their hands were meeting, even though I'm pretty sure those change all the time, or at least I would hope they do, because in baseball, they change everything.
Right.
But it was pretty interesting. A good thing that I saw that was kind of like disconcerting was Cody Martin played for 40 minutes. He played longer than everyone else.
That's pretty much the whole game, 40
and
minutes.
Only got 5 points.
Yep.
They were not shooting well. There was a lot of threes that were missed, you know, either too short, a little bit too long. Twos were missed. There was a lot of charges. There was a lot of things that I heard, I wasn't there to see it, so I can't tell if it was like a call that shouldn't have been that way, kind of like the big game with the, we're not going to go there. But
yes, no need to go back there.
There was a lot of charges and a lot more than normal, you know, so it almost kind of felt like I wasn't there to see it, but it almost felt like there was a little bit too many fouls or too many charges that shouldn't have been charges. I don't know what a charge necessarily is. I kind of believe that a charge was if you ran into a person, that person kind of did a flop. That'd be considered a charge, right?
Yeah, so a charge basically is when the defensive player has to be set in position in front of the offensive player, and then if basically the offensive player lowers his shoulder and pretty much barrels through the defensive player, that's essentially a charge. But if the defender doesn't have position in front of the offensive player, then it's a block.
Okay.
But I feel like a lot of times you can get charges early in games, if especially in a rowdy environment like that, if both teams are a little physical, sometimes refs will call those to try and calm everybody down. But I think, unfortunately, sometimes in Nevada's case, you're the team that just gets stuck with these calls when the refs are trying to calm everybody down early on in a game. But yeah, I think biggest thing for Nevada, especially early on in these games, especially on the road with both losses coming on the road, is maybe try to breathe a little bit and just work the ball around more. I think we talked about this a lot too this season. We've heard John Ramey talk about it as well. This team can sometimes fall in love with the three-pointer.
Mm-hmm.
And when they do that, if it's going really well, then yeah, they'll blow a team out of the gym. No questions asked. But if it's not going well and they're missing shots and they get fouls and they can't really attack the rim, then you see them kind of get into a rut. And it's tough to climb out of a rut on the road in conference play.
They almost came back in the second half, you know, losing 57-65. There was a point where they were only down 6 points.
Yep.
And there was like a minute left, and I'm like, oh yeah, we're going into overtime right
here
now.
We go.
This is going to be great. And then they just couldn't get the ball away from San Diego, and that to me is what got the loss. One other thing I just want to mention really quick that I thought was kind of interesting. When we were going into halftime, Brian Smudio from NSN came on for the halftime show with John Ramey, and he was talking about how at one point Musselman was so pissed that he and one of the refs are actually nose-to-nose, like,
ooh,
yelling at each other, and they had to be split off. I was really surprised he didn't get, like, a technical
foul. I'm surprised, too, nose-to-nose.
But I thought it was pretty interesting because it's very, very rare that you see a Musselman that pissed off at for whatever reason.
Yeah, because he's energetic, but you don't usually see him going after refs like that.
Exactly.
I mean, every coach goes after ref, but usually nose-to-nose. That's pretty intense.
Yeah, and I mean, I wasn't there, but like I said, that's what I was hearing, and I thought that was kind of interesting. I was like, wow, I've never really gotten to see Musselman that up.
That comes again with frustration.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, players get frustrated, so do coaches, and they can't go out on the floor and play basketball to express that. So a lot of times it does come down to conversations with refs, and that can get a little unfortunate. But again, next game for Nevada tomorrow night, Saturday, here at home. They will be playing Fresno State, which they beat earlier this year 74-64. So we'll see if the Pack can go for the season sweep against the Bulldogs. Now let's talk about the women's team, because they had a similar week to the men, going 1-1. First, a tough loss at home against Wyoming, which was kind of a bad luck day to have a loss with it being Women and Girls in Sports Day. But they still battled, falling 55-51. Jade Redmond led the way in scoring. What's new? She had 14 points. I mean, honestly, man, that girl's on a tear this year.
She's on fire.
She is. Teray Briggs right behind her with 12 points. And the Pack defense, again, we've talked about some of these games where their offense hasn't necessarily been there all the way, but Coach Levins has this defense, nose to the grindstone, ready to go, because they held Wyoming to 15 points fewer than their average this season. So even in a 4-point loss, that is still a great defensive effort. And then a couple nights ago, just as the men did, the women faced San Diego State and came away with a 74-69 victory after dominating the Aztecs in the second quarter, outscoring them 17-5. Jade Redmond led the way once again with 21 points, her third 20-point game this season. Teray Briggs notched her ninth double-double with 10 points and 10 rebounds. This was also Coach Levin's 70th win of her career, and the women will be on the road at Fresno State tomorrow as well, a team that beat the Pack 79-63 earlier this year in Reno. So we'll see if the women can get a little bit of revenge this weekend. But now let's dive into some other sports going on, because there is a lot going on right now. I mean, fall and spring are very busy times for Nevada athletics. The women's golf team was in action earlier this week in Las Vegas for the Rebel Beach Invitational. The team finished tied for 8th out of 16 teams. The Pack were led by Victoria Gailey, who finished tied for 3rd at 3 over. The men's tennis team, after having a couple competitions postponed last week due to weather, they are still planning to host St. Mary's, for what I know, host St. Mary's this Sunday here at home in Reno. Reno. The team is 3-2 so far this season. The swim and dive team are busy this week. They are up in Minneapolis, Minnesota, competing for the Mountain West Championships going all the way through Saturday. And the track and field team also competing for conference glory this weekend in Albuquerque, New Mexico, for the Mountain West Indoor Championships. And then this past Saturday in El Paso, Texas, the rifle team competed in the NCAA qualifier, where they finished first with 4,666 points. Of course, if you listened to the show last week, Doug Newth and I talking about the tough decision to get rid of this rifle team in favor of a men's cross-country team, and this team's looking to go out with a bang right now. So right now, this coming Tuesday, the NCAA will announce the individuals and teams that will compete in the NCAA championships. Hopefully the Pack can go out with another big bang in that competition. And then the Nevada baseball team off to a solid 3-1 start after their first four games, going 2-1 at the Texas State Tournament, beating Missouri State, who was nationally ranked at the time number 24 in the country, and Nevada beat them 16-4 in their opening game of the season.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And then they beat host Texas State 4-0 before dropping the finale to Utah 3-6. And then a back-and-forth game a couple days ago with UC Davis, where they won 5-4 after getting two runs in the top of the ninth inning. So Nevada baseball off to a great start this year. And a lot of that's due to pitching. Their pitching's been really good, too, here at the early part of the year. And their hitting about mid-lineup is really looking good.
Pitching's looking great. Their batting's even looking pretty good as well. Like you said, they're hitting... Zamora's my favorite player.
Yes.
I love that name. last year, he was my favorite player.
If Sean could hang out with Zamora and Jazz Johnson in one day, I think he would die of happiness.
Yeah, I'd die happy at that point. But he has a bat.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it was the Sunday game.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was 3 or 4 or 4 or 5, one of the two. He only missed one. He gotten out once, and it was a ground out, but he hit the ball every time.
And that's, I mean, half the battle in baseball is just putting the ball in play. Because you never know if someone might kick it or miss it with an error or what have you, or just slip it through, or the ball might slip through a gap. But half the battle is just putting in play, and you're right, Sean. Zamora does that better than maybe anybody on the Nevada roster, besides maybe Shrum. Shrum does a pretty good job putting in play, too. But Zamora is he'll be one of the leading batters on this team this year, and it's going to be fun to see what they can do, especially this next weekend when Nevada visits Long Beach State. So that'll be fun. And the softball team also underway, starting 3-4 through 7 games. First beating Santa Clara 6-4, then losing to Sacramento State 9-0 in 5 innings. Then last weekend, Nevada was in Houston for the Houston Classic, where they managed a 2-3 record, dropping their first couple games. First to Nicholls State 3-0, then to host Houston 4-0. But the Pack able to bounce back, beating the University of Louisiana Monroe 3-2, then beating Nicholls State in a rematch 2-0, and then before falling to Maryland 3-6 in their finale. And then this next weekend, Nevada will be in Stockton, California for the Libby Mattson tournament, facing Oregon State, Cal Baptist, and the University of the Pacific. So a lot going on in Nevada sports. Be sure to support the Pack, whether it's on the radio, out in person, online. Support them for how they represent not only this university, but our great city of Reno as well. When we come back from the break, we're going to start talking some more hockey, because it is getting real tense in some of these wild card races. We'll talk about that on the Spencer Wilson Show after the break here on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM. Welcome back to the studio. Let's get into some hockey talk right now, because we are about a little less than 2 months away from the start of the playoffs. About mid-April is when they get going. And unless you're the Tampa Bay Lightning, everyone's still pretty much in the hunt. Tampa Bay is just running away with the Atlantic Division. They pretty much have been since December. But just to see the fact that they are almost at 100 points. And they
4 points
have,
away.
Yeah, and they haven't even played. They still have a little over 20 games to play. I mean, they are on pace to put up. When I see Tampa Bay playing this year, it reminds me of the way Golden State played basketball the year they won like 75 or something games in a season. I mean, Tampa Bay, whenever they step on the ice, regardless if it's home, whether it's away, neutral site, no matter who they're playing, you just feel like Tampa Bay is going to win this game, whether it's in regulation or overtime or what have you. And I mean, if you look at, so out of their 46 wins as of right now, 42 have come in regulation. So that means only 4 times has Tampa Bay needed to go to overtime or a shootout to win a game this year. That is ridiculous. But that just speaks to the depth that this team has. Because you look at the Atlantic Division, they're not playing bum teams. I mean, Boston and Toronto are currently 2-3, so they would get the other automatic spots from the Atlantic Division. And They're very solid teams. Toronto, obviously led by Austin Matthews, is on a very nice new contract. And Boston, who has had a great week winning every game they've played so far. They had four games this week. They've won them all. And they've won seven in a row. I think there's either 9-0-1 in their last 10 games. Yeah, is that right, Sean?
That is correct.
9-0 in their last 10 games. That is a stretch that any team would love to have right now. And same with Toronto. Not Toronto is playing bad necessarily. They have fallen from second place to third place behind Boston, now trailing them by a handful of points. But really, it's Tampa Bay's cup to lose. I mean, that's kind of crazy to say on February 21st, but or 22nd or 23rd, whatever today is. But thank you, Sean. 22nd. but I honestly feel right now that it is Tampa Bay's Stanley Cup to lose. The way that Stamkos is playing, the way that Kucherov is playing, the way that all of these guys, whether it's defensive, offensive, their goalies, everybody is just stepping up and playing a great game. I mean, they beat Philadelphia 5-2 in their last game. Not that Philadelphia's top of the food chain by any means, but that's still a solid team to beat, especially on the road. And fun fact, coming up tomorrow, the Fun Stadium Series in the National Hockey League. So if you don't know, Stadium Series usually takes place in a football stadium outdoors. So tomorrow, Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, the Penguins and Flyers, doing the Battle of Pennsylvania, I believe at Lincoln Financial Field in Philadelphia.
Awesome.
So they've shown all the photos of them getting the ice rink ready and painting it, and that's just it's always a really cool game to see that.
So is it the size of a football field, or is it
No, it's a regulation hockey rink. They put it at center field.
Okay.
So it's kind of in the middle of everybody still, but it's still your regulation size hockey rink. But earlier this year, obviously with Boston and Chicago taking part in the Stadium Series in Notre Dame, it's always just a lot of fun. It's a fun atmosphere, especially outside. It's always a lot of fun. And when you got an in-state rivalry with Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, that's going to be a lot of fun. And then speaking of Pittsburgh, they have jumped up to the third spot in the Metropolitan Division after I believe they were the first or second spot in the wild card. They were the second spot in the wild card standings about a week ago. They now jumped two spots into third in their division standings, with the New York Islanders and Washington still leading that division. But Pittsburgh, again, coming on strong. We saw this last year, too. Right around December, January, they got into kind of a funk and just had a hard time operating and kind of getting wins. But they've, and again, kind of went through again that again this year, but have once again pulled out of it and are really playing some good hockey. They're 5-4-1 their last 10 games, which you wouldn't expect to really be Pittsburgh numbers in the Crosby era. But I mean, look at what Edmonton's doing right now with Connor McDavid. They are struggling. They have dropped to second to last place in the Western Conference. That team is plummeting right now in what is a very tight Western Conference wild card race. Dallas and Colorado currently hold those two top spots, but Chicago, Minnesota, Arizona, and Vancouver all within one game of being able to take a wild card spot away. So that battle for two spots between six teams is really, really, really going to heat up, and we'll see just how that plays out. And then, of course, the battle in the Pacific Division still rages on between Calgary and San Jose. Calgary now with a couple-point lead with their big win a couple nights ago over the New York Islanders, a first-place team in the Metro Division. So that's a big win for Calgary, who had kind of been sputtering through the last couple weeks. Not that they've really lost their division hold, but they have just not looked as sharp, especially on home, or not home ice. When they're on the road, they just seem to be a half a step off of whoever they're playing. And when you're trying to keep a division lead, that's going to be tough. 5-3-2 for Calgary in their last 10 games. San Jose trying to keep pace, being 7-2-1 in their last 10 games. So we'll see if San Jose, who did take over first place for a very short time period, about middle of the week by about a point, but then Calgary retaking it.
They're down only about 3 points right now anyways, so
yeah.
We'll see how this, you know, the week goes on and see what happens. But your Sharks are looking pretty good right now.
They are. You know what? They've played really well. Erik Karlsson, who was their big defensive add in the offseason, has been kind of back and forth between hot and cold this season. But as of late, that whole team playing really, really solid hockey. And then, of course, in the Central Division, still about a two-team race between Winnipeg and Nashville. And really, Nashville has had plenty of opportunities to take over that top spot from Winnipeg, because the Jets have not been playing great. 4-4-2 in their last 10 games. They are asking to lose that top spot, but Nashville just can't seem to pull it together and get it done, especially with the fact that St. Louis, the team sitting in third right behind them. Oh, yeah. Sean gave me the big 10 with his hands. That's because they've won. They're 10-0-0 in their last 10 games.
Won 11 in a row so far. 11 is pretty amazing.
Two of those 11 wins in a row were against Nashville back to back. One in St. Louis and then one in Nashville. So if I'm the Predators right now, I'm seeing a wide open opportunity to take this top spot from Winnipeg, but they just can't get it done. And St. Louis is storming towards those two teams right now, as Sean pointed out. So it's just, it's a lot of fun right now in the world of hockey, and it's going to be really fun to see how it all plays out and what's going to come of it. And I'm just looking forward to it, man. I mean, hockey is just, it's just a lot of fun.
Yeah, I've gotten way more into it, especially with football ending and I'm more paying attention to college basketball. I'm not even paying attention to the NBA really anymore. It doesn't really matter to me. But college basketball has really hit me this year, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, hockey, every time I go out to eat, I watch some hockey. I know when you work, you're watching hockey. I'll come in and watch like that. Who was playing last night? It was like
A couple nights ago, yeah, Chicago and Detroit.
Yeah, well, I walked in on you, it was like 4-1. Who won in the end, Detroit?
No, well, Detroit came all the way back to force overtime at 4-4, but then Chicago went on and won at 5-4 in overtime.
Oh, man. What a game.
But that's what's so fun about the sport of hockey. You can see a team down by 3 or 4 goals and think, oh, this one's pretty much over. And then it's spanned like in Detroit's.
It was like 2 minutes and they got 2 goals.
Yeah, first 3 minutes of the third period, they get 2 goals to pull themselves within one. They later on get the tying goal with about, I think, 2 minutes or so left in the game. So just a lot of fun. Just, I think it's the overall pace of hockey. And it's not like over like football where you got guys just like ramming each other and falling down the ice, but you still get that like body to body on the glass, and it's a lot of fun to see the speed and physicality of hockey.
It really is.
I wish basketball would adopt, this is gonna sound odd to say, but I wish they would adopt more of almost a soccer mindset, whereas let guys kind of put hands on each other and push a little bit, and if it gets absurd, like someone shoves someone out of bounds, you can call a foul. But what makes me, or what gets on my nerves about basketball, it just seems like every time someone touches somebody, we get a foul called, or someone's complaining about a foul.
I'm going to throw one at you. This is going to sound even worse. I think we should just make up a league, you and I.
Uh-huh.
That's prison rules.
Prison rules basketball?
Yeah.
All right,
have
man.
You played that on like NBA games before? Where you literally hit people and get the ball away from them? And
I mean, I've
fouled.
Seen videos of guys in prison playing basketball, so... Which I don't look for that on the internet. It's one of those videos where you stumble like it's on the related to, and you're like, oh, I wonder what this could be. And then you just get scarred for a year. But either way, we'll talk a little bit about basketball here a little bit more coming up in the next segment. But before we do that, Sean's got something for the people.
I have a pair of tickets. Win them before you can buy them tickets to see Steve Miller Band with very special guest Marty Stewart and his fabulous superlatives. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I was not going
to
be able
to. Had to read it before this week, so.
At the Lake Tahoe Outdoor Arena at Harvey's on Saturday, August 24th. Tickets are not in-house yet, so our promotions team will call you.
And that goes to caller number 9. Right now it's 775-333-0945. We'll talk basketball after the break here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM. Well, the NBA All-Star break is in the books, so that means we are getting ready for the home stretch of the NBA season. But let's talk a little bit about what happened on the All-Star weekend, because I said it last week, too. I like the festivities that they do over these 3 days. I wasn't thrilled about the celebrity game roster. I went over that last week. I won't spend any more time on that, because I thought the last like 5 years has been the weakest celebrity game roster. But either way, 82-80 was the final of that celebrity game in favor of the home team, which I believe was all Charlotte natives, since it was in Charlotte, South Carolina this year. Or no, Charlotte, North Carolina. Oh my God. I know geography. It's all right. Charlotte, North Carolina, but I believe they were all natives. So they went on to win 82-80, and it was pretty cool. This is one thing I did like about the All-Star game, is each team, home and away, had kind of a honorary player.
Right.
And they were both people that had performed great civil acts, whether it was saving someone's life or serving in the Army or military. So great to see them get that kind of recognition and get to be out there in that kind of a fun environment. And then, of course, in the Rising Stars Challenge, Team USA beat Team World 161-144. And I like that layout. I like Team USA versus Team World. It used to be the rookie sophomore game, so you would have just first year players against just second year players. And that was fun, but it always kind of seemed like you were missing what could have been with that, because you had the talent, but they were always forced to be on that team. Then you did celebrity picks, which I think Shaq and Charles did it one year, which was pretty fun. But I think Team USA versus Team World is best because you kind of start to get that feel of what basketball is becoming, which is almost to a level of what soccer is, whereas you're getting so much of an influence out to the rest of the world. You're starting to see those international kids of that generation who got to experience that for the first time pay it back. I feel like it's kind of cool to see that Team World come together, because you see all the talent that's coming to the United States to play basketball in the top league. I think when you look at soccer and you think about, if you want to make it big, you got to play in Europe, because that's the hotbed. I feel like it's the same thing for basketball. Anybody, anywhere in the world, if they want to be one of the great basketball players, they know they have to come to the United States of America to play, to be at that level. And I love seeing the NBA show off that young talent in that kind of a way. Not only do you get to see the talent coming from abroad, then you also always get to see the talent born right here in the USA. I just think it's a really cool way to set up that competition. But now moving on to the Saturday festivities, Jason Tatum won the Taco Bell Skills Challenge, which I said it last week and I'll say it this week. I still think it was a crime to not have Dwayne Wade in the skills competition, with it being his last All-Star weekend as a player, because we know that Dwayne Wade and Dirk Nowitzki have announced their retirement after this season. I say that because Dirk got to compete in the three-point contest, so I would have liked to have seen Dwayne Wade out there competing once again in the Taco Bell Skills Challenge. But that's just me.
That's me too. Yeah. I loved Wade. He's from my team, the Heat.
That's, you know, right.
So, yeah, it was kind of a bummer, but it happens.
And then neither Curry able to take the three-point championship with Steph and his brother, whose name escapes me right now. Both of them being in the three-point contest, not being able to win it, as New Jersey's Tobias Harris takes it, upstages Curry, and wins the three-point contest. And then OKC's Diallo, I'm not going to try to pronounce his first name, but OKC's Diallo wins the slam dunk contest with the dunk jumping over Shaquille O'Neal while wearing the Superman S on his chest. So I'm guessing he's basically setting himself up to be the next Shaq/Dwight Howard. But either way, he won the slam dunk contest. And there's been a lot of talk now about next year's slam dunk contest, because you could get Diallo defending his championship. And then if Zion Williams comes out of Duke and into the NBA draft, which we're all expecting him to do, everyone's expecting him to do that, that could set up an epic dunk contest for next year, to the point where it could be as epic as the ones Michael Jordan and all those guys competed in the 90s. I mean, we're getting to that level again with some of these young guys coming out of college.
One of my favorite is the three-point contest.
Yeah.
You know, that, what was it? Bird was the one.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, Bird just ran people down. Oh, yeah.
I was watching the video of that, and I was just like, you know what? I can't even make one of those. The fact that he could sit there and miss two throws and make the next 14, 15 in a row, I'm sitting here like.
And the thing was, he would walk away before his last shot even. Yeah, like, he would take his last three on the rack and then just walk away as he was finishing the round. Yeah, he was dominant when he was taking part in the three-point contest. And then we get to the actual All-Star game itself, where Team LeBron beat Team Giannis, which I think after the draft, everyone was pretty much expecting, because Team LeBron looked incredibly stacked. But I think Team Giannis had a 53-37, something like that, lead after the first quarter. But of course, as we all know, no one really starts playing in the All-Star game until the fourth quarter. And when that happened, Team LeBron took over. KD took over. He scored 31 points to grab his second All-Star game MVP. And of course, we'll see what Durant decides to do this coming season. Once it ends, he goes into the free agency market. Does he stay in Golden State? Does he go somewhere else to try and continue to cement his own legacy? We'll see. We'll see what he can do. But let's take a quick look at kind of the NBA standings as we get ready to go into the home stretch of the season. Western Conference still being led by the Milwaukee Bucks. Of course, Giannis Antetokounmpo, one of the captains of the All-Star game, playing on that team. They have a one-game lead over the Toronto Raptors, who I still think are going to end up the number one seed in the Eastern Conference, just like the way they play up and down the floor. I think they're a great team. Indiana sitting in third, able to really kind of hold themselves, even after the Oladipo injury, able to hold themselves up and keep that third spot, especially with a Boston Celtics team and Philadelphia 76ers team right behind them, only about a game back. But we'll see if Indiana is able to hold on to that spot. Something tells me they're just not going to, with how Boston and Philly are coming off of the All-Star break after the trade deadline. I feel like they're just going to take over that 3 and 4 spot. But Brooklyn then sitting in 6th, Charlotte in 7th, and Detroit in 8th, with Miami and Orlando looking on the outside looking in. Then the Western Conference, Golden State with a 2-game lead over Denver, Oklahoma City in 3rd with 4 games back, followed by Portland, Houston, Utah, San Antonio, and the Los Angeles Clippers sitting there in the 8th and final playoff spot. The Sacramento Kings, a game behind them, and the Lakers, 3 games back of their L.A. brethren. So we'll see how that goes. But let's talk a little bit about college basketball now, because there's been a lot of news recently in college basketball. One of the biggest storylines was, we just talked about Zion Williamson, but the fact that he left with an injury in that game against North Carolina and what is arguably the biggest rivalry in college basketball. And the crazy thing was, it happened less than a minute into the game, and it was because his shoe busted. I mean, I know the kid's strong. He's freakishly strong, but I think he had his back to the basket trying to make a move, and when he did, his shoe just gave way, ripped in half. I think it's a knee sprain is what I saw. I didn't know if they had specifically said if it's an MCL or ACL.
Because it's a knee injury, hasn't been
Clarified yet. So just a knee sprain right now. Coach K in his post-game press conference didn't say how long he'd think Zion would be out. Of course, the more they specify what the injury is, they'll know more of a timetable on that. But that's a huge hit for Duke, coming off of a tough loss against North Carolina. They'll most likely lose their number one ranking with that loss. But even though they lost Zion Williamson, I don't believe this is any kind of nail in the coffin for Duke at all. I mean, you got to remember that Zion is part of the top 3 recruits in the country of last year's recruiting class that all came to Duke. So even though Zion Williamson is out and that is going to hurt this team, they still have the number 1 overall recruit from last year's class and the number 3 overall recruit from last year's class. So I feel like they're going to miss a step or two without Zion there, but it's in no way at all ends their season or derails their season or anything like that. And the crazy thing is, I think when you get an injury like this, a lot of times you can see that panic in a team or in a program. And there wasn't really a whole lot of panic out of Coach K. And now, again, that could just be experience or him knowing that maybe just from the eye test, he doesn't think it's going to be that major of an injury. I don't know. But I feel like no one really freaked out when Zion got hurt, especially because they were already off to kind of a slow start against North Carolina anyway. So we'll see what happens. But more news coming out of the ACC a couple days, or really a day ago. Jim Boeheim, the coach of Syracuse, was involved in a car accident where he struck and killed a man. So obviously that investigation is still ongoing. From what I understand, bad weather was kind of the catalyst of it all. I don't have the man's name here in front of me, but he was apparently a passenger in the car that had to pull over to the side of the road due to weather conditions. They got out of the car to kind of check to see what was wrong, or if they could, maybe to put chains or something on their tire. And Boeheim didn't see him, and from what I've read, hit and killed the unfortunate, or the man that was standing by his car. So very unfortunate. No traffic citations were issued. The investigation obviously is active and ongoing. And from the police report, Jim Boeheim is cooperating with the investigation. And what's a bummer about that is Syracuse is coming off a really good win at home against Louisville that too, which is kind of a damper on that. But interesting to see where we go. Coming down to about the last month or so, last couple weeks before we get into conference tournament season. So we'll see what happens there. We'll start looking forward to that as well. When we come back from the break, we'll wrap it up. We'll talk about some UFC fights going down, some other UFC news, and the UEFA Champions League round of 16 first leg is in the book. We'll look at that as well. That's coming up on the Spencer Wilson Show here on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM. It was a big weekend in the world of the UFC as there was a pretty shocking finish that happened to the most recent UFC on ESPN program with Ngannou versus Velasquez. Obviously, Francis Ngannou had his big opportunity for the heavyweight championship against Stipe Miocic, I believe last year, and really just kind of got ran down and tired after 25 minutes of fighting. And he went up against Cain Velasquez, arguably one of the best heavyweight fighters in mixed martial arts history, period. And Ngannou knocked him out in 26 seconds. In case you missed that, I'll say it again. Francis Ngannou knocked out Cain Velasquez in 26 seconds. That's impressive, folks. Just got done. I mean, Cain Velasquez is a two-time UFC heavyweight champion. He's very respected. He's got a great ground game. And you kind of saw him close the gaps in Ngannou, try to land a couple punches, I think, to get close to get into the ground. And Ngannou just said, "I don't think so, bro." He was a right. Eat it and go down. And, man, it was a crazy finish. Ngannou just trying to throw his hat back into the ring for that heavyweight championship fight. And we'll see what happens. Obviously, Cormier's future, uncertain how long he'll continue to defend that heavyweight championship. But we'll see, man. I could see a Ngannou, another heavyweight championship shot coming up here against Cormier.
Maybe he'll go against the Nightmare, that bodybuilder that's he's from the UK. They were saying that he's coming into the MMA, and I was just watching, and I was like, that guy's scary. He's literally called the Nightmare.
Oh, well.
He looks like a nightmare. Just so everyone knows, that was not the fastest knockout in UFC history.
That's correct.
The fastest knockout came out on July 21st, 2012, the Faber versus, I'm not even going to say it, Barrio.
Yeah, Barrio. Running Barrio.
He literally leveled. It was, let's see. Jimmo tied the record for the fastest knockout in UFC history as he leveled Parrish in 7 seconds at UFC 149. So it wasn't the main event, but in 7 seconds. Think about that. That means the guy rings the bell, the other guy runs out, and as he's running out, just gets leveled.
And so knocked out. And
that's
done.
Incredible in itself.
Yes. And then another UFC event, UFC Fight Night, Blachowicz versus Santos coming up this Sunday at the O2 Arena in Prague, Czech Republic. The first time the UFC will have an event in Prague. So that's very exciting. And then the UEFA Champions League down to their final 16 teams. And leg one of the two-leg round of 16 is in the books. And a lot of interesting results. Manchester City of England pulled off a shock. Well, not really a shock, but a crazy comeback against Schalke 04 from Germany. Schalke had a 2-1 lead and a one-man advantage with about 20 minutes to go. And then Manchester City came back and scored two goals a man down to win 3-2 on the road. And I think that pretty much seals it for Manchester City, because I don't see Schalke getting three goals on the road in England to try and bounce back from there. I just don't see it happening. So I think Manchester City is off to the quarterfinals there. And then Atletico Madrid beating Juventus 2-0 in that matchup. Paris Saint-Germain getting the best of Manchester United 2-0. Tottenham Hotspurs beat Borussia Dortmund 3-0. And Lyon and Barcelona had a 0-0 draw. Roma beating Porto 2-1. Real Madrid beating Ajax 2-1. And Liverpool and Bayern Munich also having a 0-0 draw in the first leg. So very competitive games, as you would expect when you get down to the final 16 teams of these kind of tournaments. Now you got to wait all the way till March 5th for the second legs to commence. But a lot of fun there. I enjoy the Champions League just because best of the best from all over countries in Europe get together and play. It's just a great tournament. But yeah, that's it. That's the show, man.
That's all we got.
Wowza. What a week in sports. What a weekend it's shaping up to be. NHL, NBA action coming up. NBA returning to action. I believe it was yesterday. But now, again, just getting back into the full swing of their schedule. And we talked about college basketball getting very close to conference tournament time. You said it, Sean. I think they have like maybe 4 or 5 games left in the regular season.
Yeah, about 4 or 5 games left till we hit March Madness.
And that's it. And then you get into the conference tournament. And I got to ask you, Sean, just real quick here.
You got time.
So Nevada, let's say Nevada's going to finish first in the conference in the regular season. Excuse me. When they go into the conference tournament, the number one overall seed, where would you draw the line at success and bust when it comes to the conference tournament? Like, do you think they have to win it? Because they're most likely going to be into the NCAA tournament.
This is just
regardless.
The Mountain West Conference.
Just the Mountain West tournament, not the NCAA tournament.
I wouldn't
just
say
Mountain
they
West
have
tournament.
To win it, but I believe for their pride, they should win it. I believe that they will probably win it. That's just from what we've seen, they'll win it.
Yes, knock on wood.
But I don't think they need to win it, but I think they just really, really want to win it.
Yeah.
You know? Because then going into March Madness and then the NCAA tournament, that's where, you know, all right, well, we're already Mountain Conference, our conference winners. Now let's go show the world what we're really about.
And it's going to be interesting. They'll have a matchup. I believe San Diego State is the last game or second to last game of their regular season. So it'll be interesting to see if they can maybe bounce back against them here at home and maybe build up a little more momentum going into the tournament.
Right. And I believe if we beat them at home, I mean, there's most likely a chance we'll beat them at home. We're really good at home.
Two losses have come on the road.
The other thing to pay attention to is how we do when it's a neutral site. You know, when we play in neutral sites, we do really well. So that's what's going to be big in terms of the tournament. They're not playing on the road. They're not playing at home. They're playing at a neutral site. So it's not going to be too crazy of one-sided or anything. That's more of a big thing for me is that neutral site. Yeah, you may have lost to San Diego State at there. Yeah. But that's also one of the hardest places to win in general. It's just like the pit.
I was going to say, if I were to rank the three toughest places in the Mountain West Conference, not in any particular order, I would say it's Lawler Events Center, the Pit, and then Viejas Arena in San Diego.
I agree. I 100% agree with that. And I almost feel like the Pit's harder to win in just because a lot of the teams that have gone to the Pit lose. Coming to Nevada, we're just making that name for having a loud stadium, everyone getting into it, all the different things that happens at the stadium. That is just getting there. So I'd go Pitt, then Nevada, then San Diego State.
But there you go. Like we said, a lot of PAC sports coming up this weekend. So be sure to either go out and support them online, support them over the radio, and just have a fun time out there. And, of course, with all the weather, if you're going to travel, be safe. But that's it. Have a fun weekend. And you can follow the show at the Spencer Wilson Show on Twitter. And we'll talk to you next week. Peace.